En Cox estamos un paso adelante, como el muchacho que ya sabe la orden de tu cafecito incluso antes de pedirlo.
Hey, José, café con leche sin lactosa, un toque de vainilla templadito sin azúcar.
En Cox también nos adelantamos a lo que necesitas. Por eso el precio de tu plan no subirá por 3 años. Y nuestra seguridad avanzada protegerá tu red de amenazas antes de que pasen. Cox, un paso adelante. José, llamada de tu jefe en 3, 2, 1. Al menos 500 megabits por segundo de velocidad y Cox Unlimited Mobile. Impuestos y cargos no incluidos en garantía de precio. Velocidad de datos móviles reducida tras usar 20 gigas al mes.
The goal of this podcast is to learn about creativity by talking to interesting, creative people. One thing I wanted to ensure from the beginning, which was in April 2022, so I'm going on 4 years, was that I would not restrict myself to typical artists, but instead would look at creativity in other areas of life and work. One of those avenues is to talk to scholars and archivists and curators. A while back, we talked to my own brother, Donald Graham, who was a caretaker and guide of an early American mansion in Laurel, Maryland. That was fun because it was my brother and because it was during a trip up to Maryland where I was raised, so that's always fun. And old historical houses, and that one, Montpelier Mansion, was created in 1787, are a favorite of mine. Today, we are returning to that theme after podcasts about AI and creativity and talks with writers and other creative people. Our guest today is Matthew Grambling, the director of the Bandy Center for Northwest Georgia, which is located in Dalton, Georgia. It is housed on the campus of Dalton State College. Matthew and I were colleagues for a while and worked on a project that will come up in this discussion. Stay tuned to hear about the history of Northwest Georgia and Matthew's and others' efforts to curate and collect it and its artifacts. Well, good afternoon, Matthew.
Good afternoon, Barbara. Or it's a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, as we were talking before we started recording, I'm still getting over jet lag from a trip to Turkey. So it just kind of hits me sometimes, you know, that I'm still, what time zone I'm in? It's 7 hours.
Yes, I'm sure.
It's 7 hours difference. So it's, you know, that's a big difference. So anyway, Matthew, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today. And I wanted to start with you telling your story of how you came to work in this field of historical preservation and archiving and study.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be more than glad to. I went to a college, a little place called Oglethorpe University, which has a long history itself. It was it was the first denominational college, I think, that was actually ever established in the state. So there, you know, it's got all this gray stone and mortar and everything in and around. It's some people used to call it Atlanta's Hogwarts. So, I mean, because of the buildings and other things like that. But I got a bachelor's of arts in history there. So, you know, I had an opportunity to really delve into the subject. You know, a lot of my general interests were really in kind of early modern European history. I had some introductions to, you know, rare books here and there, which there were some there at Oglethorpe, which were really great to see. But really, it was actually my last year at seminary. I went to Princeton Theological Seminary.
Oh,
actually, yes, right. Yeah, I went to Princeton. I got to have an MDiv from there. And, you know, I had a friend of mine and a classmate who was in the Master of Theology program there, which is a year, a graduate. It's a, how do they actually term it? It is a advanced master's degree. So you have an opportunity to write a thesis. A lot of people who are pastors sometimes will go in and then they'll write a thesis after that if they plan on going on and doing a PhD or sometimes a DMin. But I had a Theology of John Calvin class, which was really a wonderful class. And we had an opportunity. The tagline used to be, I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but that the Princeton Theological Seminary Library, which is known as the Theodore, I think Dwight Library now, or Wright Library now, is the second largest theological library after the Vatican. So there are a lot of really amazing things that are there. And one day we had a kind of a special collections day, you know, when I was a student in this class, and they brought out all these amazing books, like everything from illuminated manuscripts, first editions of, like, you know, Calvin's Institutes, things like, you know, an Erasmus Bible, all sorts of different stuff. So it was just fascinating to see, because I very much had an interest in Reformation history at the time. So being able to see these tangible objects in these books and documents and all these things that are just very rare and just really amazing. So that was kind of my first dive into kind of, cultural heritage, you know, what's sometimes known as cultural heritage. Usually cultural heritage includes libraries, archives, and museums. So that's kind of what the term normally encompasses. So that was my first time really getting involved with kind of archival-related interest, you know. So I kind of started feeling sort of a calling towards it. I kind of meditated on it for a while. I went down a PhD route and kind of cast lot with my life. And I was, the PhD options didn't open up. I did have an opportunity and was accepted into a program. But I ended up at University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. I was there about 2 years, and I got a Master's of Science in Information Sciences. Then I worked at the House Museum and in Rome, Georgia. And after being there and after really, you know, getting a lot of really great experience working with, you know, historic preservation, working with, you know, rare books, manuscripts, being able to just kind of come into the cultural heritage world, really make great connections. I saw the Vandy senior position was open, and I applied, and they apparently liked me at that time.
Yes,
they did. So yeah, but
I was there.
Yes, I remember. So yeah, but so that's kind of what brought me sort of into this world. Is it was kind of through maybe a bit of a backdoor, not necessarily, because I had an interest in, you know, church history and things like that, and you know, much of, you know, being the fact that much of a lot of the Abrahamic religions, especially even Christianity, is a religion based around, you know, kind of a book and to some degree that's the scripture. So it makes certain sense that, you know, being a seminary student, you know, and having that kind of experience, that I would kind of gravitate towards that. So that's great. So those are kind of some of the trajectory that really kind of brought me here. And it's been really amazing since I've started. It's been, like I said, it's really felt like kind of a fulfillment of a calling in a way. And it's been kind of very serendipitous because I wanted to be a history professor, and the position at the Vandy Heritage Center comes with a chair in American history. So, and I've gotten really involved with the campus community and really making a lot of opportunities. I'm not sure if you happen to know, but there's a couple of really great campus ministries that I've been able to get involved with, and trying to really help them make some connections, pursue, vocational opportunities with the Vandy Center. Because we've got a lot of, like I said, this is exposing some of my own personal subject bias, because, I kind of consider myself sort of a budding historian of Southern religious history, and especially Southern evangelicalism and things like that. So, but we've got a lot of really amazing, items, that everything from hymns, et cetera. We've got, we even have poems and other wonderful pieces, some of them that make biblical allusions. We've got church records that go way, way back. We've got really amazing family Bibles. So it's a lot of really rich history that really goes in to, what people kind of, you know, have donated to the Vandy Heritage Center, which really tells the story of the various narratives of the communities in our region, in the seven counties, especially, that really the Vandy Heritage Center collects from, you know, and takes in donation items from. So, but it's been a real blessing. It's been really great. It's funny that you had mentioned that you had gotten back from Turkey, because we were donated like 10 boxes of the old Kodak carousel slides, and two or three of the boxes are actually from a family's trip in 1977 to the Holy Land. So there are hundreds of slides of Jerusalem and all the rest of the different places. So yeah, and it's amazing to really see this kind of snapshot. You know, I mean, they're up at the Sea of Galilee and all the rest of these different places. So, but it's just really fascinating. They have pictures like it's funny for me because many of, you know, the staff and the students that we have here who are volunteers and interns, they come and I had to use some of my seminary knowledge and background. I'm like, no, that's not the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. That's the Church of Nativity. And I find to like parse out the different places that have really been there. But it's been, you know, it's been really interesting to be able to get to do this. You know, we at the Bandy Center, we have a very material culture focus and a culture of history focus, which very much lines up with kind of my own training and my own interests. You know, I was the, and not to sound pretentious, but I was the 2021 Mills Lane Architectural Fellow with the Museum of Early Southern Decorative Arts. So I did a presentation actually on church architecture and things like that, and actually kind of the materiality of churchyards and things like that. So that's kind of what has brought me, you know, to kind of being here. And I've been here over a year now, which has been great. So I really very much enjoyed it, and I feel very blessed to be able to work here at Dalton State College and work as the director of the Bandy Center.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to have you, even though I'm not quite there right anymore, but I still feel like I am. Right. After the 21 years, I've felt like I'm still there sometimes. I just don't have to go into the office. I was there yesterday to go to the library. I use the library when I can.
Right.
So, you know, to be honest, we had an earlier episode on the work of the Bandy Center, but this was like 2 years ago. And since that is way back in the archive, I'd like to come up to speed with what the center is about and what it is now, and also how maybe it's you know, taking some different turns under your leadership and everything. I consider it to be an extremely important part of our regional culture. And the vision that Jack Bandy had. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, and then what's going on now. And I noticed, for example, that there's a dulcimer workshop.
Yes, we have.
You know, dulcimer and that kind of thing.
This weekend. So we've really, you know, it's just a kind of a quick recap. I mean, the Bandy Heritage Center is. We're kind of a historical research archive that mainly specializes in the material and cultural history of Northwest Georgia's many communities. So we mainly focus on seven communities. That would be Dade, Catoosa, Whitfield County, Murray County, Chattooga County, Gordon County. Have I gotten them all? I can't remember.
Walker.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Walker County. So those are the areas we specifically focus on. And that was... that was laid down, you know, way back at the founding with Jack Bandy's original vision. So because all the counties have very, very close cultural ties, their geographic ties as well. You know, much of that region, you know, I mean, it's kind of physiographically speaking, it's the Ridge and Valley. It's the, you know, Appalachian Plateau and a lot of that physiographical, geological kind of stuff, topography led into and shaping some of the culture and how the industry ended up developing here. So, yeah, but we're really mainly here to collect, preserve, and interpret, like I said, the material and cultural history of Northwest Georgia's many communities. You know, we really, you know, like we really are invested in, you know, community outreach and engagement because we are an outreach initiative of Dalton State College. So, you know, we really are here to kind of help inspire people to kind of have an interest in history through the various kind of activities that we do through like archival collection, you know, museum programming, things like that. We really are kind of hoping the impact that we really strive for is, you know, really influence people, inspiring people to take an interest in the past, which hopefully will lead to having, you know, positive dialogue in the present. And lead to, you know, conversations about, you know, positive conversations about community identity and memory, and maybe lead and to further inspiration for people can learn from the past, but also apply those lessons in the present and continue to kind of innovate and move forward. You know, some of the things that we have done, I would say that, You know, I very much benefited, you know, being the present director from the work of the previous director, from Dr. Fowler, from Dr. Adam Ware as well. Dr. Fowler did an excellent job in really establishing, getting kind of the Andy Center kind of known in its initial years. Dr. Ware did a really wonderful job in really expanding the collection out. So I think standing on their prior legacy, it's really been outreach has really been the main thing for me. So we've really geared up on our programming now in really creative ways that have shown actually a lot of success and very positive community responses actually right now. So we've had, currently we're in the midst of two programming series right now. One of them is the Bandy Heritage Center Textile and Fiber Lecture Series in Textile and Fiber Arts. So we've had, we had Lisa Rutherford and Kathy Abercrombie, who were both Cherokee National Treasures, come and speak actually two months ago, and they were talking about Cherokee textiles before and after removal, which is really fantastic. We also have, we are in our second year of the Catherine Evans Whitener Heritage Arts Series, which really is about a series of, sometimes known as Heritage Arts, kind of like we're kind of pivoting a bit off the John C. Campbell School, Foxfire style. Yeah. So we're really focusing on historic practices, things that people have done, things that have a certain degree of even popularity today, kind of handcrafts, things like that, and giving people opportunities. I mean, we work pretty closely with the Creative Arts Guild. They've been a really wonderful partner, very, very supportive. So we just charge a small registration fee. We most of that goes to our instructors. So far, we have had a face mug workshop that was last year, but this year we've had a face jug workshop. We're about to have yes, it's been fantastic. Which face jugs is a very important ceramic tradition in North Georgia that's been around for quite a long time.
Wow.
So, but yeah, we had 17 people out of 20 slots this year, and that was the same as last year. So for the face mug workshop, which were really great. So, but yeah, last year we've really been able to kind of rotate them out. It's the hilarious thing about it is the instructor was actually my elementary school art teacher. So Jamie Laney. So I've been able to, you know, almost 30 years on now, I'm able to reach out to him and ask him to do that stuff. But his connections are just utterly phenomenal with the folk potters of the 20th century. He knew the Metters family, members of the Metters family. He knew the son of one of the Gordy brothers as well. So he has really, really rich ties, you know, to some of the most important potters. I think the Gordy brothers, one of them, not the Gordy brothers, but I know one of the Metters potters back in the 70s or 80s appeared on an episode of Johnny Carson, actually. So goes to show that it was actually really, really important. Because a lot of collectors started buying its stuff, but we've really pivoted towards that. And we've had a really, really positive response. So some of the areas we've been really kind of working towards. We've been working towards, you know, building up our exhibits. We're continually building the archive, our archival collections as well. We've had some really amazing donations. You know, some of the areas that we really focus on are collecting areas. We're very broad, but some of the areas we really focus on are the indigenous history, the American Civil War. We also focus in on the textile and kind of the modern as well, the tufted textile industry. But we've had some really wonderful donations. One of my recent favorites is actually a chenille dress that was actually worn at a TV show about the distinctiveness of different regions in Georgia. It was worn by, I hope she doesn't mind, I'll just, she was worn by a woman named Vivian Sparks. She's actually a local resident in Dalton, and she wore that back in the 1960s because her father I believe it was her father owned Bailey Chenille, actually. So, and she appeared on the television show, and this Chenille dress was modeled after the Drake dress from Gone with the Wind. So he's really wonderful. Yes, it's great. And she joined some others really funny, amazing vintage pieces that, you know, we happen to have. So we're still moving forward with, you know, our collecting goals. I mean, people are really reaching out to us. Yesterday, we actually had a film crew from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and Fraser Jones was there, which is really great. And they were really interested in the history of carpet. So I hope I didn't ramble too much, and I hope I'm not rambling now. But yeah, it was really quite wonderful to have them here. We're getting a lot of people who are reaching out saying, a lot of folks, they're concerned about, you know, either their family legacy in terms of the things that they have. They don't have a place for them to go, which they're going to be preserved. They don't think their kids are going to really care about them. So, we're really glad, to take on these things, because a lot of the items, we're not just a dumping ground for people's stuff they don't want. I mean, we're people really select these things and take time and consider about making, the Bandy Center kind of the archive for their family story in a way. The materials are donated and title and ownership does transfer to the Bandy Center, but we still allow them to come in. Sometimes people can come in, and as long as it's under a protected case or something else, they can loan those things out. If they are the creating organization which would conclude a family, we provide them with high quality pictures and scans if they need them for anything, and they can for absolutely free. And then they can actually go, and if they want to go get them printed somewhere, we're perfectly fine with that. So that's great for personal use. So, but we're really happy to be what's known as a repository of record for organizations and, families here in Northwest Georgia. And like I said, we've taken in probably over 10,000 items since I started last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're probably, I would say several thousand, upwards of 10,000 items. We've had up to 30 collections that were donated since September 2025, which has been really amazing. And we've been able to put together a really fascinating exhibit with them. And one of them actually was a commemorative exhibit for the end of World War II. We didn't have one for the Pacific Theater. So conveniently, we had two family collections that came in. And some of the bulk of them had records or materials from the World War II service in the Pacific Theater of a veteran from Coosa County and a veteran from Whitfield County as well. So it was really quite great. And we were able to put together this new exhibit that we have called We Have Returned. We Have Returned, Georgians in the Pacific War, the Liberation of the Philippines and Philippine Independence, because that was the scope in which it covered. It went all the way back to the beginning service of one gentleman named Johnny Thornton and his time enlisting, and then another gentleman named Frank Bryant. And it really covered this whole span. And I had a roommate who was Filipino and Puerto Rican when I was at Oglethorpe. And I had remembered that there was a Philippine consulate and a number of Philippine stores and other things in Atlanta. So I reached out, and we've been growing and developing a pretty good relationship with the Filipino-American community here in Georgia. They're going to be having it's a closed celebration, towards the end of this month to celebrate Filipino-American History Month in Georgia. So and we're really happy to be able to make those connections and really kind of demonstrate, one, that Northwest Georgia just isn't an isolated region up here in the North Georgia Mountains, that many of our residents, many people who have lived here have had a global impact in a variety of different ways and have participated in global events. So the exhibit is kind of dedicated to the service of Georgians, especially Northwest Georgians, and the connections and kind of the relationship and friendship that has been built with the Filipino-American community and the Filipino community since World War II. And I was invited by the Honorary Consul General Ray Donato to attend the 2025 Kalyan celebration in Atlanta. I actually sat next to an outreach director for both of our senators, here in Georgia, which is really quite hilarious. Had dinner with them. You know, so it's been really wonderful, and we've had a very enthusiastic response. So we're reaching out to different people we haven't reached out to before, and kind of really are being able to provide them with a voice to be able to make really positive connections. And like I said, demonstrate, you know, just the surprising diversity, you know, and the impact in which Northwest Georgia has really had, not only within our state, but also widely in the region and even a global impact. So that's been really great. We've been, you know, in terms of the workshops, we've been really focusing in, you know, on textile history right now. The workshops are really, really excited about. We have another one coming up in November that will be done by Claire Davis, who's actually also a fiber artist, as well as on the counseling staff at Dalton State. And she's going to be doing a spinning wheel workshop and spinning cotton, actually. So we're really getting back into some, a lot of really old timey kind of hearth and home kind of handcraft. But it's, you know, for some reason, the Chattanooga metro area between Chattanooga and Atlanta, that's really popular. And we've had a really positive response. And we've had some really great opportunities, you know, for people to really exercise kind of their own personal creativity and witness how people have been creative in the past with the artistic designs that they've done. Leanne Klein, who's one of the librarians, actually, yep, and a colleague, she and I relearned how to do candlewicked or hand tufting. And we actually used design through the stamping process of a vintage candlewick bedspread that's actually a family heirloom of hers. So we were able to do that, and it was absolutely fantastic. So that was last year. It's also going to be coming up again next year, I believe in next February. So we'll be doing that one again. But we've been really leaning into reviving our programming, to kind of reviving and making, we've really leaned into the kind of the 250, you know, kind of plan and everything with the college of, you know, really building very strong partnerships. We've had a lot of promotional partners who've really become kind of solid standby organizations with the Bandy Center, have really supported us, really helped promote things, you know, volunteers, et cetera. So it's been really, really great to see the Bandy Heritage Center's impact grow. And I mean, you know, I mean, I think being contacted by Fraser Jones of AJC is I think a testament to the increasing, you know, outreach and impact that we're really having, you know, kind of as a special center for the campus. So it's been really, really fantastic. You know, I mean, my aspirations, I guess you could say, to sum them up, is I would love for, some friendly competition, but with the Georgia Archives, but I would love for us to be the equivalent of the Georgia Archives for Northwest Georgia. So, you know, and that's very much kind of what we're really kind of aiming towards. But we've had some really wonderful things. We've had the Printer's Mill collection has been donated to us. So we're continually working with them. So, yeah. So, and the fair is coming up this weekend, as you know. Right. So I'm sure you probably knew Lynn Cave whenever she was.
Right.
So Lynn has been a wonderful supporter, and they and the Printer's Mill Foundation has been a fantastic partner as well. We've also been able to work with the city and the county on a number of different projects. You know, we're going to be participating to some degree. I don't know if I'm at liberty to talk about it yet, but we'll be participating in the 250th celebration for the county as well. We may be putting together some programming and exhibits and things like that. But it's been a really wonderful way. We've really kind of hit the ground running, you know.
Right. That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, I mean, you know, that, you know, when Dr. Ware, he ended up going to his new position up in New England, you know, we had Brian, who was able to kind of show us the ropes, and then he retired. So, and he's given the reins to Erica, who was Erica Perez, who was our program coordinator. We really hit the ground running the best that we can. And, we're actually getting to the point where we may need to expand. We've had some really solid success with interns, et cetera, but we've since we've had so much that we're taking in,
right.
We've had, you know, so many people contact us. Now it's starting to get to the point that we might need to bring in some more people to help.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I've been in the back, you know, area there on the campus. Do you have another place that you archive things?
We do, but we very much do. So there's this. Are you talking about the cold storage area?
Yes.
Yes, we do have that. We also have another storage room that's in the collections area of backlogged materials. Backlogged materials are materials that have been donated, that we have received a deed of gift, but they haven't been accessioned in the collection due to, you know, various workflow reasons. But we're getting on top of that right now. But we also have an offsite storage area with about four storage units as well. I'm probably going to have to. I was actually recently contacted by some folks working contracting for the Paradise Mill site about taking in some architectural pieces for preservation. And unfortunately, we might be able to work something, but it's going to take a lot of time for us, because we're going to have to move our full storage unit that's back near the loading dock, probably to the one that's currently empty right now, which is in a hallway, because you can't put a piece of architectural furnishing that is 20 feet long down a 7-foot hallway that doesn't really work very well into a storage unit that's on the right side of it. It's just not going to fit. So yeah, but I mean, we do have a number of other spaces, but Erica and I and the interns that we've had, the volunteers that we have been very productive and really like going through and processing all these collections that we've had. It's just we have people just contact us quite a bit, and just say, hey, you know, would you be interested in this? Hey, we have this, you know, my mother, you know, unfortunately passed away recently. We have, you know, she had all these chenille things, or, you know, she has these books or albums or et cetera. Would you be interested? And I'm like, yeah, please feel free to come by and, you know, we'll take a look at them. A lot of times they turn out to be really remarkable pieces, you know, that are really valuable. They're valuable in terms of the genealogy, in terms of the what kind of narrative threads they provide to the history of our region, which are really kind of enriching. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But those are kind of some of the things that we're doing.
Oh, yes. Okay. And so a lot of activity going on. And
right.
Yeah. One subject that I know is important to you and vital to a region is the history of the Cherokee people.
Right. Absolutely.
And to be honest, up until your tenure, I don't know that there was that much focus on that at the Bandy Center, for whatever reason. So how have you been working to incorporate that into the Bandy Center's work?
Well, it's been one of the major missions, and it's somewhat surprising that, I mean, I know that each one of the directors focused on different areas, but, my area has really been early American history in that. So, and because I worked at the Chieftains Museum, Major Rich Home before there, before coming to work at the Bandy Center, you know, it became a natural focus for me. There were a lot of, and growing up in this region, you know, I was born in Cartersville, I grew up in Bartow County. So, you know, like New Echota was just a stone's throw. The Etowah Indian Mounds was just a stone's throw. All the rest of these major important indigenous heritage sites have been around here. But, you know, I had opportunities working at the Major Rich Home or the Chieftains Museum, to meet people who were tribal citizens, to meet people who had an interest in the Cherokee history here and the Muscogee history that's in and around the area, and really make solid connections. So being the fact that I'm now a board member with the Georgia chapter of the Trail of Tears Association, I'm also the committee chair, and I'm for planning next year's conference, which we had 225 people at the Chattanooga conference in 2024, which was remarkable. And we visited all of these places, but I've been really kind of reaching out, we have a surprising number of students who have an interest in indigenous history. So I've been able to work some of those connections that I have with the Trail of Tears Association, being able to, you know, we've taken in a lot of some related Indigenous items. I've been able to really work closely with, you know, the Indigenous heritage sites to really kind of bring them on board, really to incorporate that into some of our programming. I would say, let me think. We have we've had a couple of really good. We had Andrew Lee, who's a primitive arts instructor, who actually pretty much is very much specialized in teaching people how to do and use a lot of skills that people like paleo, you know, Indian people or people here before Columbus would know how to do, like flint napping, like making atlatls. But we've really been able to reach out and make very strong partnerships with Indigenous heritage organizations. We've worked very closely with the Trail of Tears Association, as I've mentioned. We've worked very closely in building kind of promotional partnerships and organizational partnerships with the Georgia Cherokee Committee Alliance, which actually is an organization that is constituted by at-large Cherokee Nation citizens. So we've really brought them in. You know, it's been really great because we've had a positive response. As I had mentioned, we were able to bring in those two Cherokee National Treasures. And that's kind of their Cherokee National Treasures is a designated status. It gives someone who, let's say an artist, just made a really amazing impact in terms of what they do, you know, kind of the artwork that they do or the other things that they do, the cultural work that they do. It allows them to be kind of cultural ambassadors. It's a really high distinction to be bestowed from, you know, the cultural organization, the Cherokee Nation. So we had Lisa Rutherford, we had Kathy Abercrombie, who are both fiber artists themselves. They also work, or at least Lisa actually works in pottery as well, but it was really wonderful having it there. We had some very, great participants and guests who were there too. So we've been slowly kind of bringing, you know, that legacy really here because it's a really bedrock in terms of chronology. It's a really bedrock narrative within our region. I mean, because much of the area that we are living on now was once Cherokee, and even before Cherokee, it was Muskogee land. So, you know, and it's made a lot of sense to kind of incorporate that. It's both an uplifting and also can sometimes be a sad chapter in our history as a nation. But there's a lot of things to kind of learn from it, to really engage with, to see the kind of the resiliency of it. And it's been really good to engage a number of our students here with certain opportunities, especially if they have an interest in working with those with tribal cultural organizations, to really kind of allow them to connect. As we have talked about before your retirement, we have been really we're still continuing working on that that project of the trying to get Cherokee courses actually taught here as well. So, but it just makes a lot of sense considering, especially the where Dalton is. I mean, we're right between quite a number of major Indigenous heritage sites like Nashota, like the Van House. So being able to have those kind of opportunities, being able to move in that kind of direction and bring that emphasis, you know, I think it's been really great. And it really brings a certain degree of notoriety because I'm not sure if you knew this, but Jack Bandy's parents, or at least his mother, was very, very adamant about preserving Cherokee heritage sites. It worked for her. Yes, right. She actually was a cultural ambassador, or an ambassador to both the Eastern Band and to the Cherokee Nation herself. Yes. Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense that we have this as part of our legacy, actually. Mm-hmm. And since I believe Jack Bandy named the Bandy Center for both of his parents, who really invested in historic preservation in our region. I mean, part of the reason the Van House has been preserved as a historic site is because of the actions and agency of Miss Dixie Bandy. So, you know, yeah, really, it's quite remarkable. She was really adamant. You know, she's actually Miss Dixie Bandy. Actually, she actually is recorded as one of the Georgia Women of Achievement. And let's read her biography there. Yes, she was very much invested, you know, in that. The Bandys also kind of supported a number of Cherokee institutions as well, but she was really, really adamant about preserving and telling the story of Cherokee history in this area. So in a way, I really feel like we're kind of the direction that we're going, we're really upholding that legacy. I would say that we are definitely invested in it, but I'm hoping to bring in more narratives, especially as things move forward, you know, with certain anniversaries, et cetera. We haven't maybe emphasized the Civil War as much. It's not that there's anything, we just haven't had quite the opportunity, but we really, really have moved in towards really focusing a lot on Southern Appalachian history and really kind of emphasizing that aspect. And I know that's something that you have worked on yourself as an author. So we've been really emphasizing kind of that Appalachian quality. We've really partnered very closely with Jenny Crisp and the Appalachian Minor Studies Program, which has been really great. And they've partnered with us on many of these workshops. It's been a really wonderful opportunity. We're really happy to be able to partner with these other organizations, to be able to, receive their support and also be able to work collaboratively with them, you know, be able to give them an opportunity to have some outreach and exposure that they wouldn't have had, or promotional opportunities they may have not had, you know, with other places. But it's been really awesome to be able to work with these groups of folks.
Yeah. The title of this podcast is Dialogues with Creators. And there's a couple reasons I called it that. One is all the other names were taken.
Right.
And I wanted it to be about creativity, but not about artsy necessarily creativity. And I wanted to talk to creators. Where do you see creativity as part of your work? I mean, I know some of your work is administrative, of course, but how do you see creativity in your work?
Well, I would really say like a lot of the programming that we've come up with. I mean, a lot of those ideas have been ideas that I've taken inspiration from either from other folks or, but really mostly it's been coming up. What are the things that, you know, someone who's either a museum director or a director of archives, when you're doing programming, you have to be creative. You have to think about, you know, what kind of institutional programming, you know, or museum programming that you want to create that really emphasizes and fulfills your mission as an institution, but is also engaging to the audience that you have. So you have to think and pivot off a lot of those things. So like I said, you know, coming up with this whole thing last year, we had this Heritage Art Series, which we would do lectures and then we would do, or should I say last academic year, we would do a lecture and a demonstration by our instructors, which would also hopefully, we hoped would and did lead to additional signups for the workshops as well. So those were kind of some ideas that, you know, we've had. But I really think that for me, it really comes down to kind of how we pivot or how I pivot, you know, off of the various programming ideas that, you know, kind of come up. I'm, you know, trying to take inspiration from certain points of history, trying to listen to the narratives of the people I come in contact with, what their interests are, and really plugging in that way and really exercising, a certain degree of ingenuity, creativity, problem solving and things like that, that we really pour into the programming that we have here at the Bandy Center. Like the whole textile and fiber arts series that we've got going was something that I thought of back in when I started in 2024, reached out to the relevant people. But I really think that's in terms of, for me, maybe this is sentimental, but it's crafting experiences for people to really engage with the past, which has been really fantastic for me there's something personal I find very fulfilling about it. It's kind of almost like a smithing process in a way that being able to lay down a plan, think about an engaging plan, receive collaborative feedback from some of our partners, work together, which is something we've been consistently doing. And even today, I've got an email from some of the folks at the Creative Arts Guild about preparations for the Dulcimer workshop that we happen to have. It's been wonderful to be able to do that, to be able to set down these ideas and to see a positive response by the public. So I would really say for me, there's definitely a creativity in the programming, there's a certain creativity in the writing that I have to do. There's creativity in the promotional materials that I have to do. So I have to do graphic design. I have to write up summaries and things like this and that. And oftentimes, and I even had to do this the last job, a lot of times, I'll be talking to our speakers that we have, and nine times out of 10, they'll take it. I'll come up with a title for the talk, and usually they seem to really like it for the presentation. So, there's a lot of creativity going in. It's administrative, but there's creativity within that administrative kind of job that I've got.
Well, so let's bring this to the audience who's listening. What would you say to the listeners about how they can help the center?
Well, feel free to give us feel free to email us, contact us. If there is a way you would like to be engaged, or if there's a way you would like to, receive updates or connect, feel free to contact us. You'll via email at Bandy Heritage Center at daltonstate.edu. That's one certain way. We also have a phone number as well. So just give me one moment. I remember my office phone, rather than I remember the Bandy Center's phone, but our phone number is 706-272-4452. We also are on social media. People can find us there. But if just contact us that way. Tell us if you want to volunteer. Tell us if you want to be, if you want to be on, be contacted regarding our events, or if you would like to donate something that you think is valuable, just reach out to us and it'll come to us right there. We'll be glad to make a connection. But we would really, appreciate that. If you feel like if someone feels generous and would like to, donate to the Bandy Center financially, they would just have to contact the Dalton State Foundation as well. We always really appreciate that. It really helps us, continue on and providing, engaging programming, continue on as a really top-rated archive in the area and really preserve the history and the heritage of our communities here. But I would really say those are probably some of the bulk of the ways that people really can get involved. We love it when people come and volunteer, especially if they have, they can come and volunteer more than one day a week. That really helps us out a lot. And it really gives up people opportunities, especially if they're interested in the field. I started off as a volunteer, actually, at a museum, at the Bartow History Museum in 2019. And, here I am as a director of the Bandy Heritage Center. So we're really happy, and we're very invested in giving people vocational opportunities as well, or just volunteer opportunities. So just drop us a line, anytime, and we'd be glad to set up a time to talk. And, if people want to get involved in, volunteering or other different ways, we'd be more than happy, and we definitely welcome it.
Okay. Well, Matthew Gramling, thank you for talking with us today. You're talking with me and everybody's listening. I did want to say that when I taught at Dalton State, one of the classes I taught was Perspectives for the freshmen at several years. And it was a theme-based class on the first year experience. And one thing I always did was I took the students for a walk, because one of the units was about health and exercise. Right. So I would say, okay, we'll go on for a walk. And I would take them to places on the campus that they had not seen, as far as on the campus tour, when they're visiting. And I would take them to the Turtle Assurance Colony and the Health Center. And I always took them to the Bandy Heritage Center, too, because my goal was to let them know the wealth of creativity and research going on at the campus, and for them to think of possible internships later in their college careers. Right. And I believe that was it put that in their heads. So I'm very grateful for the huge contribution that the Bandy, so Jack Bandy, and of course his parents as well, made to our region and the college. I do hope that the listeners will, if they're not aware of this, that they will look into it, because it's an amazing, amazing place.
It certainly is. We are, like I said, we're one of the few places that have the resources that we have, that have the facilities that we have. But I mean, there are, I don't know if there's any above Atlanta. I don't know if there is an archive, or above Kennesaw, at least, that has a, cold storage preservation room, which ensures that materials can be, literally, if you keep something according to, you know, museum guidelines, if you keep it at a constant, at its recommended humidity and temperature, it could last hundreds and hundreds of years. So one of the few places to be able to have that. But we really thank you as well, Barbara, and be able to bring the students by and really introducing them. So,
yeah. So thank you and have a great
day. You're most welcome. You too. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
There is a Bible verse, do not be weary in well-doing. And that has been meaningful to me in much of my life. I've thought about it a lot in regard to this podcast. To be honest, I was getting close to closing up shop on it because I just couldn't think of any more people to interview. Well, that got solved with some help from friends and some soul searching, and now I have an abundance of riches. Then there's the expense, but I got some sponsors, which is helpful. If you like what I'm doing, there's a GoFundMe link in the show notes, as well as links to the Bandy Center, which was focused in this episode, and to my website and other sources. As I always ask, please go back through the archive and see who I've interviewed in the past. You might find someone you know or someone whose life themes are like yours. For example, Susanna Matsey speaks on rearing a child on the autism spectrum. David Cady of Dalton speaks on how he wrote his award-winning book, Religion of Fear. So much more. I'm proud of what we've done, and as always, for Clemencia Villafuerte's production work. Thanks for listening.